before we go any further, just for emphasis, let's go over that definition of what it means to be persistent again. Like previously, ask yourself this question: do I fit the mold of being a persistent person according to this definition? If so, what can I do to maintain my persistence? And if not, what can I do to improve? Persistence can be defined as never giving up, despite, now note the following, despite dislike, disapproval, or difficulties. It also means to endure despite obstacles. Some other words or synonyms that have like meaning are steady, lasting, fixed, immovable. Well, how did you do? Now, as we did before, let's go over the opposite or the antonym of persistence, and that was wavering, unsure, hesitant, vacillating, easily worn down. Some good things to think about. Basically, being really persistent is an attitude, isn't it? I have personally found that there are certain phrases that we might say without even realizing it, and they can really damage us. In other words, they can change your attitudes instantly. I call these phrases attitude-adjusting statements for the simple reason that the following statements adjust our attitude. The first is the one that I think all of us have said many times before. You're working on a project, let's say, or some idea, and nothing seems to go right. One thing after another just seems to fall apart. See if you can say this along with me if you've ever said it before. So when things are going really bad, we say, if it ain't one thing, it's another. You have heard it. Now let's stop and think about that statement. When does a person usually say this? When things are going poorly or when things are going great? It's when things aren't going very well. Don't you agree? Now, I haven't seen anybody lately, after everything is going their way and they're making tons of money and everything they touch just turns to gold, and they just leap up at the top of their lungs and say, wow, when it ain't one thing, it's another. No, it doesn't happen that way. We never say this when things are good. It's a statement that is heard when things are bad. Now, as humans, we have created a negative association to this statement. So negative that the moment we say it, we fall into a trap. Allow me to explain this even further. When we say, if it ain't one thing, it's another, we have now bought into or accepted the perception that things are really bad. Now, what do I mean by the perception that things are really bad? Well, are they really that bad? At the time we feel they are, let's say something negative happens to you, and before it happens, everything is going well up until just that point. Because everything up until that point is good, are you usually able to handle something a little negative? Well, most people would probably say yes. Now, let's say the same negative thing happened again. But this time, everything up to this point has been no good. A lot of negative things, a lot of bad things have happened. Is it easier or harder to handle the negativity? Well, if we're being honest with ourselves, we would probably say harder. Notice, though, that in both scenarios, that the negative situation that arose was the same. But the latter or the latest example was harder to handle because of circumstances that happened before the event. So then perception plays a large part as to how we view things. Here's another question for you. If you say, if it ain't one thing, it's another, and right after saying that something else happens that has a slight tint of negativity to it, will you usually perceive it to be worse than it really is? You betcha. That negative attitude adjusting statement begins to program you to make things worse than they really are once you've said it. I strongly encourage people to never let this statement come from their mouths. It's a sure way to set yourself up for a negative day. You know, Shakespeare once said that nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so. That's a powerful statement. What he meant by that is the way we perceive a particular situation will ultimately determine if we will view it as good or if we will view it as bad. Of course, another word for perceive is to think. So nothing is good or bad, but thinking or perceiving makes it so. See if you've ever said this one before. When it rains, it pours. You have. Again, when last have you ever seen someone who's doing really great, they're happy, making money, you name it, it's going great for them, and he or she says, wow, when it rains, it pours. Isn't it great? It doesn't happen that way. Maybe it would be a great thing to say these attitude-adjusting statements when things are going well, but never, yes, never say them when you perceive when things aren't going your way. It will only make it worse. Another area that prevents some from being really persistent is the fact that some people are just plain lazy. And many times, the lazy people don't want to admit that they're lazy, so now they're in denial. The fact that most people want instant gratification is an additional factor that leads people to being lazy. They want everything now, 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 and shortly give up if they don't get it all. Or they credit card themselves to death. They want everything now and are financially strapped for many, many years to come. Successful people realize that it takes years of hard work to make things happen. It's the rare exception that you'll find a quote-unquote overnight success. A rare exception. If a person believes and accepts the fact that their journey will take years to complete and many more to maintain it, their attitude has two roads to run. One says, I'm not willing to pay that kind of price, the spending of years on this particular project, no way, don't want to do that. I'd rather a person say that and not get involved than get all hyped up and peter off halfway into the race. And because they didn't count the cost, they won't finish the race. The other person looks at the project, recognizes that it will take years, and says, I am willing to pay the price and do whatever it takes to get the job done. Yes, even if it takes years. If a person is prone to being lazy and realizes that any type of success doesn't happen overnight and takes lots of effort, then hopefully they'll look at themselves as opposed to blaming negative outcomes on others. Some people are not willing to work hard and accept responsibility. While we're on the subject of realizing that it does take a lot of effort to be a success at anything, it's important to appreciate that we have to give things up in order to get. Think about that. We must give up in order to get. In coaching people on a one-on-one basis, I like to first find out what their goals are. Once I figure that out, my next question is, what are you willing to give up in order to attain this goal? I usually get a lot of, and then right there when I get that response, that tells me a lot. Remember, everything that glitters isn't necessarily gold. In other words, don't get all wrapped up and excited about the glitter of reaching a goal if you first haven't stopped to take the time to see what it takes to reach it, and more importantly, are you willing to pay the price? After taking the time to see what's involved in paying the price or what the cost is of reaching the goal, it might not have the glitter you thought it did. There have been goals in the past that I have thought about and wanted to attain, but after analyzing what was involved, I either decided against pursuing the goal or I made some adjustments. Like perhaps maybe extending the completion time of the goal or cut it in maybe a half or a third. It helps us become very realistic when we take the time to see what's involved in reaching a goal. Doing this may take a lot of the glitter out of the goal even before you start, but if the glitter is going to be taken away, I'd rather have the glitter taken away before I start a project than have it taken away weeks, months, or even years later because of not counting the costs or because I wasn't really willing to pay the price. Doing this helps take a very, very realistic approach to reaching a goal. As I study people who are really persistent, I have found that they all have another thing in common. They all seem to demand and expect more from themselves. They don't allow themselves to be denied of reaching that goal. And I think it's interesting to observe how this relates to a never giving up attitude. Now, logically speaking, if you're a person who demands more of yourself and halfway up the ladder it breaks on you, do you quit? No. That step breaking could represent maybe failure. If you demand more from yourself, you will not accept failure. You will refuse to fail or to be denied. If you don't accept failure, you will ultimately do what? You'll ultimately keep going. It's a domino effect, and it's a good one too. If all these thought patterns are perfectly set in place, everything will fall right in place. Maybe not overnight, but it will come together. How can a person determine if they are the type of person who expects more from themselves? Well, simply put, it's by their actions. They keep going on and on and on. Individuals who truly expect more from themselves don't allow themselves to live in comfort zone. People who stay in a comfort zone are afraid to leave it for fear their situation could be worse than what they're experiencing now. Not to mention the fact that psychologically, it's usually too painful for them to leave. Now, let's call this person John Doe. Here's John Doe. He's living life in comfort zone, and now all of a sudden, he sets a goal, whether it be to lose weight, quit smoking, make more money, whatever. So he's all excited, he works on the goal, and he starts to leave his comfort zone. Being that he hasn't conditioned his mind to be able to handle leaving his comfort zone, psychologically, as he leaves it, it becomes too painful. So as humans, we have the tendency to do what? We have the tendency to take the course of least resistance, right? So then what's the course of least resistance for John Doe? keep stretching toward his goal, or run back the comfort zone? Well, running back the comfort zone would certainly be a lot easier, wouldn't it? And that's exactly what he does. Even though it's the easy way, he can never get results. So he goes back and forth and back and forth, stretches toward the goal, it becomes too painful, and then he runs back. A constant mental battle. But when a person has truly made a commitment to reach a goal, then and only then will they be able to break this never-ending cycle that gives them no rewards. If a person demands more of himself when they get a second-class result, they view that as unacceptable. So they keep trying until they get the results they expect or feel they deserve. Deserve. Interesting. That's a good point. They get the results that they expect or feel they deserve. Now, that relates to self-esteem. As unusual as it may seem, self-esteem and being persistent really go hand in hand. Let me explain this further. A person with low self-esteem is usually overly conscious of themselves and are many times mentally consumed with thinking what others think about them. So, for example, if this person is working on a goal and someone tells them no, they are usually afraid of what that person might think of them if they go back and ask again. Oh, I'll just upset them. They already told me no. Why ask again? And the violin just keeps playing. But a person with a healthy self-esteem doesn't think that way. Their way of thinking is just the opposite. Someone tells them no, and they won't allow that to stop them. They keep going. Let me ask again. Even though they've already said no, maybe they'll change their mind. There's nothing in this type of thinking that gives you a clue that this person has low self-esteem. I seem to notice that the healthier the self-esteem is, the stronger the persistence. Of course, as long as the dominoes, such as the beliefs, the values, and so on, are lined up correctly. Now, one way to determine if your self-esteem or lack of it is getting in your way is to ask the question, why don't I feel like continuing or wanting to keep pushing forward? The next thing is to answer the question very honestly. If the answer has something to do with feelings, such as, it's a waste of time, no one's going to listen to me anyway, and thoughts of this nature start to rise up, then it's a good sign that a lack of self-esteem is what might be slowing you down. Now, I spoke just a minute ago about the fact that people who demand more from themselves are usually persistent type people. So it would be relatively reasonable to assume that people who don't demand much of themselves are not usually very persistent. I think it's also interesting to note that one of the reasons that some people don't demand much from themselves is because of that self-esteem factor. You know, many people feel, due to a lack of self-esteem, that they don't deserve better. Perhaps they feel that way because of the way they were treated in the past, or maybe the way they grew up or were raised. If a person was raised in an environment where they were constantly cut down and they were told they were no good, they will many times grow up believing that. So here's what happens when we get older and want to set some goals. We start setting our way up to a journey, and soon we get to the point there's some friction or some opposition, and then we start telling ourselves, hey, we got to keep going. Then we try to picture that goal. We keep going forward until we run into some more obstacles, and here's where the low self-esteem destroys us. Oh, it's not worth it. Why keep trying? I probably don't deserve it anyway. Or the other scenario could be that as they are very close to reaching their goal and now it starts to become very real for them, they start feeling guilty about attaining that level of success. Now, where does that feeling of guilt come from? If you said because of lack of self-esteem, that answer is one of the many and you'd be right. Unfortunately, I see way too much of this. Someone who really means well, they want badly to reach a goal, and as they get very close to it, well, they begin to feel guilty, or they feel they don't deserve getting to that next level, whether that next level is financial, maybe losing weight, or just maybe getting a better or higher paying job. They just quit. And now by quitting, they've actually rewarded the negative feeling of feeling guilty and feeling undeserved. That becomes just another blow to their self-esteem, and every time they reward this negative feeling by quitting, they just keep programming themselves that they're no good and they really don't deserve getting to that next level. And what will then happen is that one day down the road, they will try again to reach their goals, but they will stop themselves in their own tracks. I personally had to master this one. Believe me, after you find out that your wife has been cheating on you for 3 years with a 15-year-old kid and then later tells you that the kid that you thought was yours really isn't, this doesn't go over well in the self-esteem department. I felt worthless. I would reason, well, I've lost everything. Why try getting up and starting again? I'm just going to get knocked back down. I experienced so much psychological pain that I was deathly afraid to go forward in life for fear something else would fail, and I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to handle that emotionally. Until I finally got to the point that I was sick and tired of living this way. So I went on a quest to heal my mind, if you will. Then a real neat light went on after I mentally stabilized myself. And I figured if this or that idea fails, it certainly can't be as bad as what I've been through for the many years in the past. That's for sure. So I was able to turn all this negativity into leverage. My unfortunate past had enabled me to develop an incredibly high tolerance to mental, emotional, and psychological pain. Talk about a change in attitude, huh? Another area of interest that I would like to share with you that helps us to be really persistent is leverage. In other words, why? Why do I want to do this? Now, we touched on this earlier in the program. I encourage you to make for yourself what I call a leverage list. Basically, it's an index card or a piece of paper with reasons why you must not give up. Now, included on that paper should also be names of people. Now, let's say, for example, that one day you feel like quitting or slowing down. Things aren't going your way. Now, I know you've never felt this way, but just pretend for me. At this point, you want to be reminded of all the reasons why you need to keep going and all the people who are behind you and all the people who are not behind you. What? You might say, hey, wait a minute, all the people who are not behind me? Sure. Haven't you ever had someone say to you or someone tell you that so-and-so said that you'll never make it or you'll never lose that weight? And you thought, just wait and see, I'll prove it to them. And by thinking or saying that, it made you want to do something more to get closer to your goal. I think we've all experienced that from time to time. Well, it could be said that thought gave you leverage or another reason at that moment to keep going. Look for as many of those reasons as you can and put them on your list. It can include those who said you would never make it and those who support you. It is also vital that you keep that piece of paper or index card with you all the time so that you can always pull it out when you need it. I would keep mine in my wallet for several years, and every time I pulled it out, it always gave me that extra push that I needed. Perhaps there is someone who is very proud of you or has helped you extensively. That person might be a good candidate for your leverage list. Always remember that when things get tough, we all have a tendency to lose our focus. So if we feel a little down one day, pull out that leverage list, and it will help us to be reminded of some of the reasons why we should keep going and who would be proud of us if we didn't quit. Why don't you take time right now to get a piece of paper and preferably an index card if you have them, and let's start your leverage list. Now, if you need a minute to get a pen and something to write on, let's go ahead and do that now. Obviously, if you're driving or for whatever reason you can't do this exercise at this time, please don't forget to make sure you do it later when it's more convenient. Okay, so on your piece of paper or on your index card, write in nice big bold letters on the top there, my leverage list. Now, somewhere beside that or near it, write the specific goal that you would like to apply your leverage list toward. It could be losing weight, maybe just not giving up in life in general, a business goal, whatever it is. You might even choose to make a leverage list for each of your goals. And by the way, if you decide to do that, it's okay if some of the same information is on several different lists. Now, I'll share with you how I would set mine up. I would get my index card and write leverage list for business. And in my business, I fly a lot, and let's say my goal is to purchase an airplane as opposed to going commercially. Now, to me, attaining this goal would be a great accomplishment. It will enable me to have a lot more control of my time because I would get to the airport when it's convenient for me, not the airlines, not to mention that it would be a lot of fun. Now, on this particular leverage list, I might want to put my father, who was murdered when I was a teenager. Why would I put him on my leverage list? Well, let's say some type of challenge gets in my way, and it makes me really feel like quitting on my journey toward trying to attain my goal. Now it's time to pull out that leverage list. Ah, I see on my list my father's name, or my father. My family has been in aviation for years, and it made my father very proud to see his kids fly. It really meant a lot to him. So then by looking at my leverage list and seeing my father on it, the thought of him being proud of me owning my own airplane would come to mind, and for me, that would motivate me to keep going on and not give up. It will put me right on target again. Notice though, I said for me, it will help keep me going. For someone else, that may not work for them. You have to put on your list what moves you, What moves me to action may do nothing for you, and what moves you may do nothing for me. Everyone's different. The key is to write down on your list who or what pushes your button. That's the bottom line. I recall years ago the people who said that I would quote-unquote never make it. I've added those people to my leverage lists. Be creative. Think back as far as you can. It could be something or someone back in grade school that you might want to put on your leverage list. An important factor in making the use of your leverage list successful is to keep it handy and close by. This way, if you feel that you're getting off of focus just a little bit, or a lot for that matter, you can pull it out and have it readily available. Perhaps the number one factor that prevents most people from being really persistent is fear. Fear of failure, fear of rejection, fear of success, and the list can go on and on. Now, in this segment of the program, I will not deal specifically with many ways of dealing with this fear, but I will share some techniques that I feel are very beneficial in reversing some fears. My Dreamers Never Sleep or Their Eyes Closed program deals in greater detail on reversing the negative thought processes of fear. Now, I think it's interesting to note that fear is a learned behavior. You know, when an infant is born into the world, they have no concept of what fear really is. As we get older, that is where we begin learning such behavior. Now, one of the worst things about fear is that it can have so much control over a person. It's almost like a paralysis. Fear and success simply don't go together. Now, here's where the problem lies. Obviously, if a person is subject or prone to fear, they are certainly not going to want to move forward, much less to be persistent about it. The pain of fear far surpasses the pleasure of success. Additionally, fear is usually based on perceptions of past accounts or situations that may have happened in our life. For example, if someone tries to attain a goal and for whatever reason they don't make it happen, and some people really beat themselves over that. Now, the critical point is right when a goal is not developing the way we would like or expect it to. What we say and do right at that point will make or break our future and determine if we will develop positive or negative perceptions. It's like being at break point in tennis. You know, the next point will determine who is ahead and who will be behind. So at this point, when a person has approached an obstacle, they have two choices of observation. Now, the first may be the negative one. I can't do this. It's a waste of time. This is too painful. Nothing seems to go right or my way. This isn't going to work. And this obviously can go on and on and on, this negative talk. Now, let's assume that this person buys into this type of thinking and quits. At this point, maybe they lost a lot of money, emotionally they're drained, they have nothing left but negative memories about trying to reach their goal. Now, what do you think is going to go through their mind the next time they consider setting another goal? Do you think it's going to be negative or positive? Well, if you said negative, I would certainly tend to agree with you. It's at this critical point that the fear begins to creep in. Perhaps months or years go by that this incident occurred and now they want to set another goal. They tend to get excited and then, oops, the mind starts playing the negative pictures. Remember last time I tried this? I failed. This happened to me. That happened to me. And if I try again, what if it all happens all over? And now they live in what if-ville. They never allow themselves to get to the next level because of the what ifs. Well, let's say that later down the road, they say to themselves, okay, let's try it again. So they do. But one very, very vital thing has been neglected. The attitude hasn't changed. And because it hasn't changed, well, here's what happens now. They muster up the energy to try again, and another obstacle gets in their way. Now, some people really don't realize that when they set out to attain a goal, that there's going to be many, many major hurdles. So they feel it's going to be smooth sailing all the way. Don't we both wish that were the real world? So anyway, they start out on another goal, and again, basically the same type of attitude they're having, and now, lo and behold, bam, another obstacle hits them square between the eyes. We're at breakpoint again. Before trying to reach this or another goal, if they would have taken the time to change the way they perceive or view obstacles or problems, they might be able to hang on. But they haven't, so they just quit again. Now, this person is really digging their grave deeper and deeper. The negative pictures and associations build one on top of the other. They get higher and higher, worse and worse. Now, these pictures are now so mentally painful that the thought of reaching out for another goal is the very last thing from their minds. How sad. On the other hand, after the first perceived failure, if they had just taken the time to try to learn or grow from that mistake or that error or problem, they would have been better off and better equipped to handle the next challenge. Learning from previous errors or failures help interrupt feelings of failure or inadequacy. Really good point to remember. Now, what makes all this the more challenging is the fact that this type of negative thinking usually starts when we're young children, and worst of all, it happens unconsciously or without even thinking about it. Dwelling on past mistakes and mishaps are a sure way to develop and maintain fears of success, rejection, and the like. Now, I'd like to share with you a technique or a system, if you will, for people who are prone to fears of success, rejection, or other type of related fears. First of all, I have them define the fear. Let's, for this example, use the fear of rejection. The next thing I do is to have them get three pieces of paper. And on one paper, I have them write on the top right corner the number one and circle it. Then on that piece of paper, I have them write the following words. Why I want and need to change this behavior. Why I want and need or must change this behavior. Once they have completed that, the next step is to answer the question, why do they want and need to change this behavior? Sounds similar, doesn't it? We've talked about this earlier. There is one particular thing that I'm looking for when I ask this question. I'm looking for what moves them or pushes their buttons. Maybe the answer hits them emotionally, and that's okay. That's what I want it to do. I want it to move and shake them, because when the reality of the fear begins, they're not going to force themselves to go through it, and they're going to need to have something to force themselves to go through it, and hopefully it'll be the information on this page one. Their answer might be, I want to need to change this behavior because I'm tired of being limited like this. I need to do this for me or my family or my children. I don't like to be controlled by what others think of me. I don't like this fear controlling me. The list would read similar to this. Now, at this point, I question the information on page one. Why? Well, at this time, it's just words on a piece of paper, and words are cheap and mean nothing. How then, though, will I determine if they really want and need to change this fear of rejection? Well, it will soon be determined by their actions. They'll either go forward or allow the fear to stop them in their tracks as we go on this technique. Now, the next step is to have them write down on another piece of paper, and that piece of paper is going to be number three. They're going to write down on the top right corner. That's right, number three. We will get to number two after number three. We're going to reverse this. Now, I have them write down the words limited beliefs. Now, their job here is to write down all the limited thought processes that come to mind when they are put into a situation that they allow themselves to feel the rejection. And it doesn't matter how silly or stupid or irrational it sounds, it needs to be written down. Maybe it has something to do with dating or sales. But for this example, we'll use sales. They might write, the person that I try to show my product to isn't going to be interested. They might feel that I'm too pushy. My heart begins to beat like crazy when I begin to make my presentation, and I feel I'm going to pass out or panic. Now, what I'm trying to accomplish here is to define all the person's limited thoughts that they have developed in association to this rejection. Now, why is that important to do? Well, how can we change a negative thought to a positive one if we don't even know what the negative one is? It would be quite difficult to do. So the reason that I have them put it on paper so that they can see what thought or thoughts are causing them to feel this way. Now, the next step after defining the negative thought is to change it to a positive one. Now, changing a positive thought to a negative one is very easy. Believing it, that is what is difficult to do. Because remember, when you change something negative to positive, that's just positive thinking. And positive thinking is like spray paint on rust. It doesn't last long. Now, the next step is page two. So on page two, I have them write down the words empowering beliefs. E-M-P-O-W-E-R-I-N-G. Empowering beliefs. And then I have them write down the opposite of what they wrote down on page three. Now, on page three, they wrote the kind of thinking that creates a fear of rejection. Now, if you or I felt the same way that they did, the information that's on page three, we too would also have the same challenge. Remember, what a person writes on page three is not only what they think, but it is also what they feel. They must now change first the way they think and then change the way they feel. This is where we continue on page two. So on page two, we just put down the opposite of what's on page three. Remember what page three was. The person that I try to show this product to isn't going to be interested. The opposite is what? The person that I try to show the product to is going to be interested. Now, some say, though, Gary, wait a minute. That's not reasonable. Everyone will not be interested, and that's right. So then let us continue the statement. If I show my product to someone and they're not interested, that's okay. I'll just move on to the next person. Now, that's a better thought process for page two. The next negative thought on page three that bred this fear of rejection was, they will think that I'm too pushy. Well, what's the opposite for page two? They won't think I'm too pushy, and if they do, they probably weren't interested anyway. We could also add, if I were concerned that everyone thought I was too pushy, I would never talk to anyone, nor would I be able to make a living. That covers a lot of bases, don't you think? Now, the next negative thought was, my heart begins to beat like crazy when I begin to make my presentation, and I feel like I'm going to pass out or panic. And really, there are people that really feel this way. The opposite could be, my heart beats like crazy, but if I keep going and I don't quit, I'll eventually get used to this, and then I'm also not going to pass out or panic. That's assuming that a person never has really passed out. So, in review, what have we done up to this point? Page one helped us identify why we need or must change this behavior. The second is we identified the negative thoughts that cause the feeling of rejection, and we wrote it down on page three. Page two, we put the opposite information that was on page three. So essentially, we went from negative thinking, page three, to positive thinking, page two. Now, that was the easy part. Remember, positive thinking is like spray paint on rust. It doesn't last long. Changing negative thoughts or phrases to positive ones doesn't make them believable. That's the next step and the most difficult. Just saying the person that I show my product to is going to be interested and they're not going to think I'm too pushy or I'm not going to pass out or panic doesn't make it believable. But at least we have laid the groundwork. We must first know what the thoughts are before we can believe them. Now, how do we believe them? That is truly an art. Taking a negative thought and changing it to a positive and then believing it right away is a real skill. Now, before I teach a client how to believe a positive thought, I first ask them to tell me how they came to believe the negative ones, the ones on page three. The common answer is, well, I don't really know. I just do. This is where some of the problem may lie. If a person doesn't know how they came to believe a negative or irrational thought, the chances of them knowing how to believe positive ones are going to be very slim to none. So they must be taught how to do this. So let's first describe how a person programs themselves with regards to the thoughts that are on page three, their limited thoughts. Now, again, one of the thoughts on page three was, my heart begins to beat like crazy when I begin to make my presentation and I feel that I'm going to pass out or panic. Now, picture, if you will, looking at a person while he or she is saying or believing that, whether it be verbally or non-verbally. What three clues do they give us that tells us beyond a shadow of a doubt that they believe it? Well, first is perhaps the most obvious, the words, if they're saying it verbally. My heart begins to beat like crazy when I begin to make my presentation, and I feel that I'm going to pass out or panic. The second is the tone or the way they say it. Oh, my heart, man, it feels like it's just going to beat out of my chest, and it beats like crazy, and when I begin my presentation, oh, I feel like I'm going to pass out or panic. And the third is their body language or the physiology that really gives them away. They look scared to death. It's obvious. Everything about them says, I'm going to panic, or I feel like I'm going to panic or pass out. So these three key ingredients are part of what we use to create a belief. Now, unfortunately, most people don't even realize that they're actually programming themselves in this manner. So, if that's how we program or condition ourselves in a negative way, how then do we do the same for positive thoughts or beliefs? The answer is very simple. We do it the exact same way with words and how we say them and the body language, but at the other end of the spectrum, the positive end. This is the difference between just saying positive words and believing them. Now, of course, the goal now would be to direct our attention to page 2, the new beliefs or positive thoughts, and learn to believe them. Let's review some of what's on page 2 once more. The person that I show my product to is going to be interested, and if I show my product to someone who is not interested, that's okay. I'll just move on to the next person. They won't think I'm too pushy, and if they do, they probably weren't interested anyway. And the last one, if I were concerned that everyone thought I was too pushy, I would never talk to anyone, nor would I be able to make a living. Okay, we've just gone over the easy part, saying the positive words. Now the tough part, and remember, it's only tough if you don't believe it. The first thing to hone in on are the words, and they are positive. They won't think I'm too pushy, and if they do, they probably weren't interested anyway. Now the tone. Before going on that call, I would instruct the person who has this real challenge to say this verbally and with the right tone. Say it as if they really mean it. They won't think I'm too pushy, and if they do, they probably weren't interested anyway. Now that we have 2 out of 3, the correct words with the correct tone, next is that body language or that physiology. How they stand, how they look, or how they act. It must be in harmony with the words and how they said them. So once these 3 ingredients are in line, the brain will begin to get a new message. The change won't be overnight, especially if it's an intangible fear, such as a fear of success or rejection. Whereas tangible fears, like that of animals, can be reversed very quickly. Again, this is only a brief discussion of just one of the many techniques that can be used to assist a person in changing negative thoughts to positive ones. It takes work and practice, but it's well worth the effort.